Good, right?
Yep.
Call this meeting to order. Today is Monday, January 25th, 2021, and this is the working session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors. It is 6 o'clock p.m.
Just a question, can the people remotely hear, Carol?
Your course.
John, can you hear?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we get roll call, please?
Director Beckendorf?
Here.
Director Crumpeller?
Here.
Director Gutenberg?
Here.
Director Haynes?
Present.
Director Karcher? Jerry?
You're muted.
Here. Pam's trying to hook it up with these. I'll just do it like this. Just don't listen.
Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, that was hard.
Okay. I get a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Crumpeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the BOE meeting of January 11th, 2021?
So moved.
That was John.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, we'll move on to communications. Our first one is EHS Principal Update, Elizabeth High School Pathway Academy. Hi, Brett. Thank you for being here, sort of.
Again.
Again, yeah.
No worries. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Loud and clear.
Really just kind of a continuation of last week. You know, you guys saw the courses we proposed. One of the things that I hadn't really gotten into was the academies and then the pathways within those academies and how we kind of came about that. So back in early September, we created a group to start looking at this. And what we decided is, and this was a group of teachers, I was the only admin present, and it was teachers from social studies, English, family and consumer science, the career tech ed, PE. We thought we should have an umbrella, and then within that umbrella have our pathways. So that's why we decided we would go with academies, which is the big topic, and then pathways within each one of those academies. And I hadn't really gone into that. So each of our academies are, and there is no particular order. We have an engineering, math, and physical science academy. We have an arts, humanities, and civil services academy. We have business, communications, and hospitality. We have health and biological sciences. And then we have what we call build your own. So it's for those kids who, you know, each one of those isn't quite what I want. So I want something a little more broad. And so, and it fits more of the niche pathways and niche careers that people might want to go into. A classic example would be anthropology, which doesn't necessarily fit in under one of those other academies. So we created that so kids could have a little bit more choice. Now within each one of those academies are pathways. And again, that was a separate group that took the academy piece. When I say separate, some of the academy folks were on those groups And so what we did is we looked at each academy and said, okay, health and biological sciences, what would fit under those? And so we came up with different pathways. Some examples, biological, you know, so like biology, health sciences. We have the health sciences that is also licensed versus certified. So for example, if somebody says, I want to be a doctor, that's one pathway. Somebody says, I want to be a CNA or a CMA, that's a different pathway. Exercise science, and even within that, then a different pathway is agriculture and vet sciences. So within each of those broad spectrums, we created some more linear directions for kids to go. What I want to emphasize is that as we get into this, and we will emphasize with our kids, is that they're not exclusive. So if a kid starts in a pathway, it's not like as a freshman, sophomore in 2 years, and then a freshman after that. If I go into the health science pathway, that I don't have to stay there. I can go into a different pathway, and there is no penalty for that. So we're just trying to give kids options to explore potential careers, whether it's a career that needs a four-year degree, whether it's a career that needs a certificate or a two-year degree. Doesn't matter. We just want to give them opportunities to see what is out there after they leave Elizabeth High School and make sure that we've given them a foundation. And one of the things I tell folks often, and I don't know that it resonates enough, and I wish it did, is that it is as important to know what you don't like as it is to know what you do like. And so if a student goes down the, I'll use agriculture and vet sciences just because it's on the page, not because I don't like it, because actually that was somewhere I was going to go at one point in time. But is that, you know, you start down that pathway and go, no, this isn't for me. I would rather do something else. Then you can go down a different road and at least learn now in high school, that's not for me. I'll use myself as a personal example because it's kind of sad. When I graduated from high school, I was going to be a stockbroker. I was going to make millions and millions of dollars selling stocks. Went into business, and when I was in college, so I'm paying for it, realized this is not for me, and became a teacher. I mean, come on, stockbroker, teacher, those are as antithetical as you can get. But it was what was my passion. It's what I felt great about. So we want to give kids those opportunities, regardless of what they think they want to do, to explore it, see where their interests lie, see where their interests don't lie, and then make decisions. And so we really, you know, the staff, and again, I cannot commend my teaching staff enough. They did this. This was their research. This was them looking at all of the different pathways and academies that different schools have and coming up with what we thought would best fit Elizabeth High School. And, you know, we're very excited. And one of the things we've done with the new courses that you've seen, all of those went to the Pathways Committee. And so what they did is they looked at these and said, all right, are these things that should fit into pathways? And if they did, you got them. And if they didn't, you didn't. And so what we're trying to find is courses that intrigue teachers and intrigue kids, but also provide opportunities for looking at what am I going to do after I graduate? And so every new course that you have in front of you and every new course that you will get coming down the road has been vetted and will be vetted by the Pathways group to say, does this truly fit one of the pathways that we have in our academies? Is it something that we truly think kids should look at? In the past, it was pretty much, you know, they came to me, I might talk to Douglas about it. Now we're being much more, I'm not sure what the word is, but intentional about what classes we're putting in and do they fit for our kids to have opportunities to look at what they want down the road. So we're very excited. You know, the courses we've put in have all been approved by, or the courses that we've submitted to you, I should say, have all been approved by the Pathways Committee and have all been plugged into a pathway that they think a student should look at and should take potentially for one of those pathways. And one of the things you'll see, and I think I sent all this to Kristen, is that when you get within a pathway and all the courses that are listed, you know, we may say that we want 5 credits in a pathway to certify completion of said pathway. But there may be 10 opportunity credits within that. So we're not saying you have to take this, this, and this. We're saying you have to take a couple of those, but then give students choices to really be able to explore their interests and what they think they want to do as it relates to one of the pathways to get, you know, to get an idea. This is what going into agronomy really means, or going into vet science, or I really want to be a doctor. What does that mean? And it's not just what we've had, but it's what we're coming with. And so every course that we will bring to you from hence, you know, from now until, well, from now on, will be courses that have been vetted by the Pathways Committee and have said, yes, this should be in a pathway for kids to move through Elizabeth High School. So that's kind of where we are, and that's something that I didn't talk about 2 weeks ago. So, you know, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Yeah.
So how many pathways exist now? I mean, based on the research and that you all have done, what, 3 or 4?
Okay, so we have 5 academies.
4 that are,
that we have, yeah. One of those being the open kind of academy, and then 4 that are specific. You know, you get health and biological science, business, arts and humanities, civil service, and then engineering, math, and physical science. And within each one of those academies are multiple pathways. So, an example, health and biological sciences, there are 5 potential pathways within that, ranging from biology to exercise science, and then within that. So, any of the academies are going to have anywhere between 4 and 6 different pathways kids can go.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Brad, this is Douglas. Just for everybody's information, Brett and Leanne and I toured, maybe now 2 years ago, we toured Green Mountain High School, and we may have talked to you a little bit about that back then. Green Mountain School has a model that uses some of the same terminology, academies and pathways. One of the features of their system is that a student can take a number of different pathways, and even in different academies. And so it, you know, think of it like maybe a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout badge system. You know, you can get badges in different areas. And those pathways that they've completed successfully would show up on their transcript. So that's a model that I'm familiar with, and I know Brett is, but I wanted to preface my question with that background information. And the question is, can students choose more than one pathway? And if so, do those pathways have to be within the same academy? So there's 3 questions here. And then, do students have to choose an academy? I mean, do they have to choose an academy or a pathway? I mean, maybe that's more about that, choose your own, or can you just like not choose anything? Meaning to say, is there a traditional graduation credit track through Elizabeth High School with these academies? And I wanted to ask that early, Brett, so that when the other questions come up, they have some of that structure in mind.
So yes, yes, and yes. K-12 kids can choose an open academy and just, you know, get the traditional graduation requirements, which I think we will probably be bringing a new set of requirements to you based on the academies and pathways. We're not there yet, but obviously we will bring some suggestions to you before anything goes into place. But yes, a student can choose a pathway in one academy and a pathway in another academy if those are things that they are interested in. And we're not locking kids anywhere. So we just want to give opportunities primarily for, again, exploration. So they can go in and look at different things. And as I mentioned before, a student may start down one academy as a freshman or sophomore and go, oh, no, I don't want this. This academy is not for me. Or I like this academy, but the pathway I chose isn't what I want. How about a different pathway? And so we will see a lot of movement. And, you know, Green Mountain at this time has a part of their diploma that says this student completed this pathway. We aren't there yet, but again, that may be something that we bring to you for a graduation. I don't know necessarily requirement isn't the term, but as a graduation acknowledgement that maybe there are different diplomas for kids that go through different pathways, just for no other reason than to certify this student has done this work. Again, which we think will help them as they move on past Elizabeth High School.
Hey, Brett, it's Paul. I'll pile on with the multi-question questions. First, I'm looking through some of the descriptions that we have in front of us here, and I see a lot, and it's in the Elizabeth High School Pathways 2021-2022. There's a lot of yellow highlighting. Can you indicate to us what that yellow highlighting indicates?
Yeah, that I may have sent Kristen an older version, and that yellow highlighting was just Ashley Pollard, one of our science teachers, primarily chemistry and AP chemistry. I'm going to give her a shout out on this because she has been the driving force between by keeping the Google Doc that has all of that in there. So as she goes through all the iterations, and if something pops up and she has a question, she will highlight that and then come back to a counselor or to me and say, hey, what about X, Y, and Z? Why, you know, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the highlights are simply, those are internal questions that may or may not, to be honest, have been answered. It's not, the highlights don't mean this is golden or this isn't. It just means those are questions.
Perfect. My second question to you is, and only because I was one, a fifth year senior in college, because I did much like you, decided partway through my sophomore year, nope, not doing this. What happens to those kids that are just adamant about completing a pathway that have switched a good ways through their pathway?
Well, I think that's going to be why we come to you with some changes to graduation requirements.
Okay.
Because we may need to look at some alternative opportunities, and it gets kind of, it can get messy, but if we get too lockstep and you have to have this, 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 and this.
Right.
And I'll use social studies for example. You know, there's a requirement you have to have 3.5 credits, and it is prescribed. There would be a difference if we said there are 3.5 credits, and instead of all 3.5 being prescribed, 2 are prescribed, but 1.5 are flexible within that department, which would provide more opportunity for students to venture down the pathways. And I think as you look through some of this, you'll see some of that because at least in the latest edition, it is this or this or this or this. So there are some that are like, you have to take these 2.5 credits. But of the remaining 2.5 credits, you have a wide variety that you can take to meet that pathway. And so I think what you're going to see from us maybe this spring, most definitely, if not this spring, next fall, is we think we need to give a little bit more flexibility in these areas. Here's what it means. I mean, obviously, we'll spell it out, what we think it should be, bring it to you and get your guys' opinions, and then kind of lay that out so that moving down, you know, moving forward, kids have a lot more opportunities. And we don't, we prescribe some things, but we give them more flexibility so that they can do more exploration for what they want later on.
No, that's great. Thank you. I was just thinking, almost like that open one is there, almost like a pathway prep for kids that are just aren't sure or are on the fence between one or the other. And you've got enough courses that spread across so many different pathways that they could easily slot in. Thank you.
That's true. There are a lot of courses you'll see in one academy that are also in another academy, just because those staff that met thought, these have crossover, and they do, depending on what you're looking at. So let's give kids opportunities.
Okay. Thank you.
So Brett, one of the things then from a student perspective could be, there's like a two layers of potential benefit for students with this. The most kind of generic would be there's a wider range of courses that students can choose from than's currently being offered at Elizabeth High School.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
And then on top of that would be, I can focus on a couple of one or a couple of areas that are a little bit more coherent around a potential interest area that focusing isn't an individual activity that happens between, say, a student, a counselor, and their parent as they're looking at their schedule, but it's, in a sense, pre-prescribed that if you're interested in kind of, health sciences, here's what you should be focusing on, right? And it takes some of the individual approach out of course selection for students. Is that fair, or how would you react to that?
I would say, yes, that's fair, but it also gives them more guidance. While there is some prescriptive parts to this, there are courses that, the committees have said, you have to take these classes. There are a wide range of classes that can also fulfill the total number of credit requirements. So, it is prescriptive to a degree, but it's also kind of more of an outline. If you're really interested in this, you need to try these courses because they will give you a better idea. Not saying you have to. As I mentioned earlier, some of those credits are, you can take this or this or this, which gives kids three options instead of what we may have traditionally done is, well, you just get one. Or with no guidance in the course description guide, it's just kind of, you figure it out. Now we're kind of giving people a roadmap and then letting them choose. There is a main thoroughfare, but there are a lot of off-ramps, and you get to choose which off-ramp you go down.
Great, thanks, that's helpful.
Good analogy.
So Brett, on the pathways or academies, do you see the open, is it an open academy or an open pathway? Open academy?
It's an open academy.
Do you
yes,
see
ma'am.
That where the alternative ed kids will fit, or where are they going to be directed towards?
Well, they'll fit where they feel most comfortable.
Okay.
So we're not going to say if you're in our alternative program, you have to do the open pathway. We won't do that. We will say if you want to, and that'll be open to all of our kids, if you want to go down this road and have more a generic way of looking at it is a more liberal arts, type of education versus more of a prescriptive, any student can go down that. But if a kid that's in our alternative program says, you know what, I really love lifting weights, and I think this exercise pathway within the biology and health sciences academy is what I want, power to them.
Will there still be math courses that are tailored to them and courses that are tailored to them if they can't take maybe some of the courses that are in a specific pathway?
Absolutely. Our math department is really working to incorporate more courses into their curriculum that are more career focused. Now, that's not to say that the AP calculus and pre-calc and all those courses are going to go away. They won't.
Right.
But we're going to have some more opportunities for math courses, English courses, science courses, even social, you know, all the core, they are all working to develop courses that are more focused on here's what it is, but here is the practical application, the potential job application to these things. And so, yeah, there are going to be a lot of opportunities. All of our kids, whether they're in the alternative program or not, will have access.
Okay. Thank you. Gary, John, anything else?
Good. Good.
Douglas?
It's a good explanation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
Yes, thank you very much.
Brett, you're going to join us later. Do you want me to just text you when we get close?
Well, I figured I would, that would be good, Douglas. I figured I would just turn the video off, leave the volume on, and I could hear. But it would be nice if you could shoot me a text. That way I won't be too late.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Where's my agenda? Before we move on to Ron, Chief Financial Officer, I need to add in that Director Karcher and Director Gutenberg are attending remotely. I should have done that at the beginning. Thank you, Douglas, for
the reminder.
Now, Ron, on to you.
All right. So, just to kind of give you a heads up on what's going on with the fund balance resolution and the budget revision, the mid-year budget revisions. Fund balance resolution is pretty straightforward. It's just something we have to do. That's a state requirement that when we use a portion of the fund balance, beginning fund balance, to bring forth a resolution saying that we understand we're going to use a portion of the beginning fund balance to balance the budget, and you know, make sure that there's enough revenue there or enough fund balance to meet all the expenses that you're approving. So that's what the purpose of this is, and it was I think I might have shared with you in the past that the purpose of it was to prevent what happened here 17 years ago. No. 19 years ago, and what happened in St. Vrain, just so the board would know that we're using a portion of the fund balance, and that we're not anticipating ongoing deficit spending. So that's the purpose of that. Moving on to the budget discussion, I'm going to start off with the good things. We have a higher starting fund balance in the general fund, if my memo says extra $468,000, higher than what we anticipated when we were building the current budget. There's a return of rural funding due to Proposition EE. And then also there's a second round of ESSER funding, which is the elementary school and, you know, for elementary and secondary school. I forget what the rest of the acronym stands for, but it's COVID spending related. And this is the second round because a couple of weeks ago you approved the first round for the grant application, and now the second round is coming. That was from the latest stimulus bill that was passed in the Fed level back in December. And we're going to get about, after flow through to legacy, we're going to get about $400,000 for this. And of course, there's lots of strings attached, and you got to prove that once the expenditure is made, how it's COVID related and all of that too. So there is those strings that we're going to have to worry about in the future. That, just so you know, since it was so recent, and the table on, or the spreadsheet on CD's website said these are preliminary allocations. They might now be final allocations, but because it was so new, I did not include it on here because we have not had an opportunity, when I say internally here, to discuss what are we gonna spend the money on. So I didn't put a placeholder in here for expenses, nor did I put a revenue in here, a revenue line item for this. So, but we have until September of 2023 to spend the money. So it's not as if we have to get it spent.
The 400,000.
Huh?
The
400,000. The 400,000, correct. Okay. Correct. So I did put it on here, and one of the reasons is, didn't put it on here, is, like I said, didn't want to just throw it on here without putting some thought into it. And I don't even know exactly when the application is going to be due for this, and I don't know if there's going to be an application because they might, the state might just use the current application that we have for ESSER, but we have to update the budget. Hmm. That might be what they do. So they haven't completely thought it all out, and there is not specific guidance from the state for the second round of funding here.
Would that $400,000, would that pull away from expenses that are built into the budget that would then roll into the general fund?
Depends if it's COVID related. We might be able to do that, but okay. Really I don't know of anything currently
that's in the budget. Okay.
That's specifically COVID related.
Got it. Okay.
So
Ron, could you answer that question again? It was choppy.
Yeah, can you
Okay. So we don't have anything specifically in the current budget that's COVID related that's not already a part of the budget that was COVID related, that was part of the first round of funding for the CRF, which is the $1 million, the coronavirus relief fund money. That's that $1 million. Some of that is in this budget that we have now, that's part of the revision, but is it because of the revision? It wasn't added as some sort of expense that we are anticipating ongoing that's COVID related, but that's one of the reasons why I did not want to include this ESSER II funding as part of this component budget here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So at some point in time, when we do have a plan put together, then we will. Am I talking loud enough now?
Yes. Okay. Yes, you are.
Okay. So I don't, and I'm probably shouting. I know I'm shouting in here, but
what?
when we decide what we want to do with it, and we can even make ventilation type of adjustments to improve our the environment in the classrooms. So, however, it's only $400,000, and I say only. I just brought to you 2 weeks ago what the expense just for the high school to replace all the units on the high school would cost.
Right.
So it's a big chunk of change throughout the whole district here that we could use money. But I'm just using that as an example.
Sure.
There's a variety of other things too, but all strings attached, and you have to make a direct tie to that. It's COVID related.
So like an increase in energy bills because we've been running our air system so much more to keep fresh air in the building. Could not.
Well, surprisingly, I've been looking at those utility bills and there hasn't been very much of a difference.
Huh.
It really hasn't made as big of an impact as I initially thought. However, I don't know what's going to happen with the units, what it's doing to the units at the high school, at the middle school, at the elementaries. So that's...
Excuse me, sorry.
That's my fault.
Thank you, Douglas.
Yep.
Look, I'm in an echo chamber.
Okay. So that's one of the things that we're going to have to you know, not only running him as often as we are, but also putting a larger strain on him because the filters that we put in there are thicker,
right.
And they are making him the equipment work harder. So I don't know what that's going to do to it long term, if we might have to start replacing these sooner rather than later, some of these units.
Okay.
So, like I said, it's just one of the ideas. Other ideas people have been throwing out, I've been sitting in these meetings for these trainings, people are asking about, can we buy school buses? But there's got to be a direct related correlation between COVID and our response to COVID related items.
Social distancing. We can now put the kid in every other seat.
Right. Oh no, I've already thought all that. But then is it just for a portion of the total cost of the school bus?
Right.
Because are we still going to need to be worrying about social distancing in 2 years? And the lifespan of a bus is, well, in our case, 30 years. Most districts, you know, 15 or 20.
Right.
But are we like make ours last, you know, until they're 30 years old? But that's I don't want to get hung up on that.
No. That's my fault.
That's okay. And also due to the seemingly ongoing changes, not only on a weekly basis, daily basis sometimes too, in regards to what's going on with our funding, what's going on at, you know, not only the Fed level but the state level, and all the different changes and different economic forecasts, what's happening with these new variant strains happening in South Africa and the UK and all that. And so what's it going to look like a year from now? Don't know. What's that, you know, is it going to impact our economy? Is it going to reduce our, you know, significantly the sales tax, personal income tax for the state? So who knows exactly what's going to happen, but my thinking is we might have to come back for a supplemental budget for this current year, just simply because there's going to be changes between now and the end of this fiscal year. Plus, the state has a supplemental budget for this current year that they're saying they're not going to probably get passed until late spring. Now, does late spring mean late April, late May, early June? I don't know. Because of what happened last year, the state legislature didn't tell us what kind of money we're going to have to spend until mid-June. So I don't know what's going to happen. But in its current format, the supplemental budget is going to shortchange what I have in the budget to the tune of $110,000. I don't think that's going to happen simply because of the outcry from the 100-some districts that are seeing a reduction in the funding because of the supplemental budget request. So who knows what's going to happen. But I'm just giving you a heads up. More than likely, we might have to be sitting in this room again for this year's budget for a supplemental budget request.
And that's that zero interest? Is that the supplemental budget request? The zero interest loan that we get from
loan program, no.
That's different. Oh.
Yeah, okay. That's completely different. So
I mean, what's proposed right now is that they cut our funding. And ours is like a 1 or 2%.
Right.
Yeah. For this year.
This year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some districts are 10 to 15%.
Wow.
So, when Ron and I went over the budget today, he reminded me that coming into this budget year, we were in the midst of the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. The economic forecast was terrible. The cut to public education was huge.
Yes.
The cut took the form of a doubling almost, or thereabouts, of the negative factor. So our per pupil revenue went down noticeably and I would say significantly. So if you imagine that all the school districts experienced the same thing, because this was not an Elizabeth experience. And then on top of that, they're going to cut districts. I mean, there's plenty there, 5, 8, and 10, but I think the highest went up to 15%.
Wow.
So while it's like a proposal, it's not a done deal. And that's why Ron is saying it's not a done deal. That's why Ron is saying he doesn't want to put it in, because it's not done. And he's not going to put it in until we either know what the revenue is going to be, or we know he's not going to put expenses in until we know what those expenses are. He's not going to put in expenses for revenue that we don't need to until we know the answer to both questions. What is the revenue, and then what are the associated expenses? Which means this is a budget revision. It's similar to a supplemental. We're changing the budget. It has to be done officially. You approve, you authorize what we spend. We can't spend, we meaning the administration, the paid staff, can't spend a penny more than you've authorized us to spend.
Right.
You authorize us based on a budget that gives you confidence about where the revenue is coming from and more or less where it's being spent. And then you get monthly reports where it is actually being spent. And we may have to, we don't typically do another budget revision after January, but that's another way of saying it. It's a final adjustment, just because there's so many unknowns this year, and even at this point in time, there's a number of things that we don't know.
And you were saying we don't know when that'll be, if it happens.
Right. Oh yeah, we don't
so that's
know.
What
you're... Well, it's dependent on the legislature, and you know, they.
Anything more need to be said?
Nope.
They gaveled in at the mid January a week or so ago, set up committees and said, well, the earliest, you know, then we're done until maybe February 15th. Who knows, February 15th or March 15th? Who knows when they're going to start meeting again? So, again, it's contingent on what happens in the state legislature. Let's see. Moving on. So I noted in the cover memo several reasons listed that impact expenditures, and what, you know, I listed them there. One I forgot to leave that I left out accidentally was the mid-year step increase for returning employees. So I you know, talked about that 2 weeks ago. You know, everything was approved. Everything is still on track. I just left it off the memo for, you know, just because the whole brain just fell through the cracks. So that's that. On the revenue side, normal changes based on enrollment from the state, but also, one thing that I don't know if it's going to happen, and it was in last year's budget. Does anybody remember the para on behalf payment? It was about $275,000. I forget how many millions of dollars that the state set aside to help boost PARA's, you know, to reduce PARA's unfunded liability, to, you know, reduce that liability there. And the reason we would have to include it in the budget is simply because that's the way the Governmental Accounting Standards Boards now say we have to work with PARA, because it was the money that was put forth for PARA was on behalf of the school districts. We have to show it as a revenue and expense, even though we never get any of the revenue, nor do we expend any of the dollars, nor do we have any control over the expenditure of those dollars. But it's just a function, an exercise we have to go through. Don't know when that's going to happen again. It's not going to happen this year, I'll tell you that, with all the other challenges out there. Other funds, the Pupil Activity Fund, I initially said that we were going to increase the transfer from what we had already increased it from last year to this year, and then taking a really close, hard look at it, I decided, you know what, we don't need to increase the transfer to the Pupil Activity Fund, because we already increased it by almost $80,000 from last year to this year. I don't recommend increasing the transfer again. However, it's really up in the air in terms of what our expenses and revenues are going to be, because we're not going to get any gain, and we're going to have reductions in the participation fees and that. So just simply because of fewer students participating in that. However, we do need to increase the transfer to the food service fund, because even though the feds are paying us for our, you know, all the students that are eating and that, it doesn't necessarily mean that it covers all of our costs. And because of the reductions that we have been made over the past few years due to some of the federal mandates that come down on the healthy meals, that means we can't sell some of the other items that kids really like and also help us balance our budget. So we're going to have to increase the subsidy to the food service fund because of that. So
can I add something to that? Just it's to help you understand what Ron is saying, especially as a newer board member. Because of more onerous regulations, we went from not having to subsidize food service. Food service, the revenues equaled the expenses. More onerous regulations, federal regulations, were put in place. When that happened, that required us to begin subsidizing food service. That's the condition that we entered the pandemic in. And therefore, when the federal government said, well, we'll provide free lunches to everybody, it in essence increased our subsidy, because we were already subsidizing everybody that was eating. Now that more people are eating, we have to subsidize more. And I think that the amount Ron has estimated is an additional $30,000.
$30,000, correct.
It's not a small number, but also, you know,
an expense.
I joked with Ron, there's no such thing as a free federal lunch.
And the sad thing is, you talk to any other school district, they're experiencing the same thing in food service. They're hemorrhaging dollars in food service. So we're hemorrhaging, but not to the extent that I hear other school districts. But still, we have to subsidize it, where in years past, up until a few years ago, we did it. They broke even, and that's ideal. And unfortunately, it's no matter how much you reconfigure our food service, we're not gonna break even with the current unfunded mandates that we're being put under. So
on the document online, food service fund says $635,000.
Yes.
So that, I mean, I thought you said $35,000.
Okay, we're talking about something.
Can you say that a little louder,
Yeah, can
Kim?
You guys hear? I don't know if they can hear.
Can you repeat your question?
I was asking, the document that was online in our packets, it says food service funds is $635,000, and Douglas just said $35,000. I don't understand the $635,000.
Is that the total?
Okay, so $635,000 is the total expenditures. Is the budget for the total expenditures for food service. And then right above it is the $580,000 in revenues, which includes a $100,000 transfer. Oh, and you're looking at the appropriation.
I was looking at that first, yes.
The appropriation resolution. That is the amount of money that you're authorizing by approving this budget tonight, authorizing us that we could spend up to, this is the $635,000. That's the appropriation.
Okay. And we were subsidizing it by $100,000?
We were subsidizing it to the tune of $70,000, and now bumping it up to $100,000.
So the subsidy increase from the original budget was $70,000. Now the budget is subsidizing food service $100,000. That's the $30,000 increase in subsidy.
Gotcha.
It comes from the general fund, goes to food service, rather than going somewhere else to subsidize additional costs on our side for providing free lunches to a larger number of students, because the Fed said everybody's entitled to a free lunch. Is that correct, Ron?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Yes, it
is. I have a quick question for you. It's a depressing one. Have you started looking at what $15 an hour minimum wage is going to be?
No, I saw that the other day, and my heart sunk. Okay. Are you kidding me? We just, we're, it hurt us so much just getting it to $12.
Right.
And because you had this domino effect.
Yep.
This compression of wages, you know, the hourly wages between steps and lanes. So, yeah, I thought about it, but
put it off to another day.
Yes. Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see.
Yeah.
Because I know it's going to be, if it does pass or it does get implemented, it'll be a phase-in.
Right.
But I don't know what that phase-in looks like because I think the current federal minimum wage is $7 and change, I think.
Okay, so it might take a while to even get up to where we are in Colorado.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
That's kind of my hope.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
We're taking it as an aspirational statement.
Exactly. Okay, anybody have anything else? Ms. Carey? Okay, we'll move on to superintendent update.
All right, I've got a number of things there, and I'm gonna go in reverse order.
Okay.
In part to be able to load up the last one. So give me 1 minute while I...
Is that the video first?
Yes.
What? The video going first?
No.
Okay.
Maybe it's just a matter of moving this table out too and then turning it, rather than trying to switch tables. In-person learning update. I don't have anything new or special to report other than things are going really well, as they have been more or less for the whole school year. For those of you that have seen and heard the reports. The teachers are still taking the students on getting them out of the school. Today I was at the middle school, just happened to see a teacher take her class out. They walk around the middle school and then they walk back in. They take their mask off. There was plenty of snow around, didn't impede them. It was kind of chilly, but they get out, they get some fresh air, and the students really like that. I just continue to be proud of our teachers for dealing with the both perceived and real risks. There are real risks, but I think that it's been proven that the virus has not been spread in our schools, and it may happen, but there's been so many days of so many students and staff in the schools that if it happens, it's going to be an exception rather than the rule. Today we did have to shift a number of athletes to remote learning. So an individual that's a part of the wrestling team tested positive, had been in close contact essentially with everybody on the wrestling team. And so the wrestling team has been shifted to remote, I think, at least through Monday. So the whole team. And I think including the coach or coaches. So that's what, we have a design for that. We'll send out a message to the high school parents saying that there was exposure in school and that students were shifted to remote because of that. We don't send a message to parents every time that students shift to remote, only when the exposure happens in our schools. That's what we communicate, so that they know that there was some exposure in the schools and what would matter. If you have any questions about the in-person learning, I think I shared with you the message that I sent to parents on Friday. Mm-hmm. I remain just as optimistic as I did on Friday about our ability to safely remain in person through spring break and through the rest of the school. And if we have any issues like on the wrestling team, so we'll respond and adapt, keep the time as short as possible. I think you also saw included in the message just an update on where we stand with vaccinations. Vaccinations won't be required for our employees, but they will be made available. The names have been given to Centura Health. Centura Health will send them an invitation. They can choose whether or not to go get vaccinated. We're not sure how much latitude they'll have about where. We've said that if they don't have much choice, either Parker or Castle Rock would be the preferred locations versus an Aurora or a Colorado Springs location. They did have some extra vaccine, like within 12 hours after giving them the names, and they sent out invitations to dozens of our staff with a message, you know, we have extra vaccine. If you show up at this time in this place, you can, you know, and wait in line, you may get vaccinated. We had a little bit of a issue because people were saying, is this legitimate? What's going on? I don't know what this, you know, will I have another opportunity? So we tried to clarify that. We had been waiting for information from Centura to tell our employees what to expect, and we had not received that. And then when they sent this out, so
are they not allowing people to make a reservation to go, or it's just you have to show up and wait in line and
first
come
first?
No, the standard, and that's we wanted a little bit more of their language. Yes, our employees will be sent an email invitation to make an appointment.
Okay, good. So they don't have to just stand there
no.
an hour or so, and then oh, if they ran out, it's like too bad.
Come yeah, we ran out.
Okay.
No, the standard approach will be. Appointments.
Okay, good.
I think, though, that what happened last week may happen again, multiple times, meaning to say they've got vaccine. It's got 48 hours left on it. They've given it to everybody that they, you know, originally sent messages to. Then they send out a message to a different audience to say, come and walk in. They don't want that vaccine to go bad, and they just send out a little bit of a broadcast message. I mean, that's what that was. And then it's walking. And they ran out of those extra viruses pretty quickly because they had Thursday times and dates, and then they had Friday, and they didn't even have the Friday ones because it was all used on the Thursday. The other thing that we are making available to our staff that is not required is access to what's called Binax Now. It's a rapid test that can be administered at home. Rapid meaning you get the results within 15 minutes. It's more for monitoring or kind of ongoing testing versus kind of a response to either exposure or to symptoms. So you would just, according to their recommended protocol, you would just take the test once every 5 days. And because of how long it takes to kind of develop, you would be able to catch it quite early and then be able to avoid exposing others. It's shipped to the employees' homes that indicate that they're interested by Amazon. And they have to use a telehealth appointment to do it. So it's not like you can kind of go into your bathroom, lock the door, and do a secret swab. I'm sure at some level somebody could do that, but that doesn't have the same impact in terms of what anybody would want in terms of a negative test to be able to come back, say, to work or to school earlier than, say, the more conservative protocol for staying away from others. So we're...
Douglas?
Yeah, Carrie's...
Can you speak up just a tad? I think you're... please.
Okay, Carrie, I think what's happening is I'm speaking to the board members in the room, and the microphone for the Zoom
is behind you.
Behind me, so I apologize.
That's right. Stand up behind that screen. No, I'm kidding.
So, again, that's
voluntary. I heard most of what you said, but I feel just...
Do you want me to try to clarify anything? Is there anything?
No, I think I'm okay. I think I'm okay right now, but...
Okay, thanks for bringing that up. So we're submitting that list to the state, which includes address and cell phone and so forth. Again, we'll submit, let's say we submit 100 names, 50 may sign up for it. Just because we've submitted the name doesn't mean that they're going to take advantage. We also have the ability to order some for our health offices. So let's say that there's some students like the wrestlers that are exposed. We can give, we believe, we're confirming this, that we can give each student one test, say take it home with you, and after X number of days, do the test. They would have to do it with the telehealth. And if it comes back negative, it shows up as a, you know, on their phone, and they can say, you know, I took the test, I don't have the virus, and then we would be able to get them back into school faster.
That's optional though, right?
Yes.
For the students?
Yep. Yeah. And they could get tested somewhere else. They don't have to get tested.
That's just the quickest way for return is to get tested and have a negative.
Yeah, so it's 5 days from exposure, then get a test, and then you can return 7 days after exposure. Mm-hmm. If you've been symptom-free for 5 days, and then you get a test in the last 2 days.
Right.
And then there's a 10-day protocol that's similar, and then the standard protocol was 14 days.
Yep.
But it could cut it in half.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, especially if on the front side, the quarantine guidelines, which is what we base our remote learning off of. We don't quarantine, we just base our exclusion from in-person off the quarantine protocol. If you believe that that's overly, what would I call it, that it's excessive, that we're over-quarantining, the quarantine guidelines are quarantining too many people, this is a way to have fewer people impacted.
Yep.
And so the test just makes it easier for those people versus, because they can still go get a test now and keep their exclusion from school down to 7 days. It just makes it easier that they don't have to go somewhere, take time off work, whatever.
Okay, what happened?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Well, now we're back.
There you are, John.
Scared
me, John.
Scared all of us.
You froze up there for a minute.
Did you hear all that, Carrie?
Yes, except for the last minute because you froze up.
Oh. I didn't freeze in person.
No.
Okay.
I heard the audio. I just didn't see any movement.
I didn't hear anything.
The hamster on your router stopped running.
Yeah. I think an important thing is that, to know is that we're going to continue the same protocols and procedures that we've been using and that have been working for our health offices, for when kids are sick, for what happens when they get exposed. So both, especially the Binax Now rapid testing, is only a support or a service for those that choose it. And then the vaccine as well doesn't really change anything. So, if on a case-by-case basis we need to deal with an individual differently, say an individual's been vaccinated, and then they've been exposed, we are likely to say, no, you don't have to quarantine, but that would be following the CDC and the state guidance on that. But I don't expect to see that kind of thing happening for at least a month or two where you have the combination of somebody's been vaccinated and they've been exposed at school or whatever, where we would need to take action. I'm going to shift gears to the draft calendar. I sent you a copy of the draft calendar. The calendar committee has met. The way that we develop the proposed calendar is we start from the existing calendar. It works. It's worked for many years. We make tweaks to it. We made a big tweak last year, which was to add 2 more non-student days during the week of Thanksgiving, and that got overwhelming support, especially because of COVID and how much everybody just needed that break, and we're very appreciative. So there was no interest in returning back to having school the Monday and Tuesday of Thanksgiving break. There was some interest in trying to regain the what they call the fall break, which is earlier in October. The problem with that is that you have to, if you're going to have more days off from school, you have to add days of school in the same semester. And the only way to add more days in the first semester is to add them at the beginning of the school year, earlier in August. And we did a big survey to parents a number of years ago and staff about school start dates. and there was really very little interest in starting school any earlier than we already do for two main reasons. One, it's good family vacation time. People like to take their vacation in August, weather, whatever. And our elementary schools and part of our middle school, I believe, I don't know how much of the middle school is air conditioned, but it's hotter in August, so there's more likelihood of higher temperatures and difficult classroom environment if you start earlier. So there's, in this draft calendar, there are no significant changes that are proposed. It's been shared with the staff. We'll see if there's any feedback. And then once we get that feedback, we'll share the draft with parents and say, this is the draft. We'll see, we'll give them an opportunity to make any comments. We almost always, why don't you, start after Labor Day? Why don't you do this or that? And we share those things with you. The committee will look at them. Many members of the committee have been there on the committee for a number of years, so they've addressed many of these questions before, but we address them every year. And then it'll come to you as a proposed, either the first or the second meeting. We don't, there's no post-COVID kind of newfangled schedule or anything. And as we discussed when you revised a policy, there is no plan to stop having snow days or snow delays because of weather. So the calendar builds in at least somewhere between 5 and 6. The time, it's really the hours, for 5 to 6 snow days.
Yeah.
And that will still be built in. Okay. State testing, there's been a lot of questions, a lot of consternation about whether there will be state testing this year. Last spring, state testing was canceled. I think that happened across the country because everybody was remote. The momentum seems to be right now is they are going to test students. They are going to require us to provide computers over a period of weeks that are highly, there's a pretty strict protocol about those computers that are used. And the procedures for making the test protected, and then offering English language arts through 3rd through 8th grade, math 3rd through 8th grade, and then science 5th grade, 8th grade, and I think 11th grade. I think I've got that right.
Can you guys hear?
Can you guys hear okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm working at it.
So what if you face the microphone towards you?
I was just thinking if you could move to that table in the center and the whole board would face John and I.
No.
I would just put the computer on the edge of that table and face it towards you.
There.
Because you tend to put your hand up where I don't think that they're able to hear you.
Oh, hey, Douglas.
It's just, it's easier to talk to people than to
hear
the air.
Yeah.
You guys aren't just air. You're
I'm used
airheads.
To talking to air.
A screen. They said airhead.
She said it's easier to talk to people than just the air. So.
So we are planning to provide the tests. I mean, it's a federal requirement. The state is really not clear that they're going to be able to get out of that federal requirement. It is a hotly contested issue. There's a lot of advocacy against the tests. People don't believe, and I don't believe they'll be valid. I don't think they're going to tell us anything useful. And especially made public or used for accountability purposes. So there's kind of two big questions. Do we offer them at all? And then if we do, what are they used for? Are they just used locally? Or are they also used for accountability purposes or other purposes? There's a belief that there's a lot, that whatever inequities existed before are exacerbated by the pandemic, and people want to capture that through testing. And then do something with that, which is to make up for learning losses, etc., which for us is not, it's like, we're not dealing with learning losses. And many rural schools around the state are not experiencing learning losses because they have been able to and made the effort to remain in person through the school year. And there's that's not the issue. But the districts that have been in the situation of having to be remote more than they're in person, and to have their in-person look like a pale comparison of a normal in-person, one day a week in one suburban school district with 15,000 kids. That's what they consider in-person. Many districts they consider that say they have in-person, they're in-person for the student 2 days a week. 3 days a week the student's at home, and this is mostly happening at secondary level, middle school and high school, but plenty of elementaries have had to deal with this too. So if you think about trying to test, you know, 900,000, or it's probably fewer than nine, there's 900,000 kids in the state in schools, but not everybody's tested, but hundreds of thousands of students, when you have all these different kind of learning modalities that have been changing on an ongoing basis, what kind of data are you getting? The last thing, and why I put it under discussion for you guys, state testing, is some districts are passing resolutions on the issue. The only ones that I know of have passed resolutions saying we don't believe that students taking the state tests is a good use of their learning time because their limited learning time because of what's happening with COVID. The results aren't going to be useful. We have our own local assessments. This is a waste of time, resources, etc. That's the gist of what the resolutions have said. So when we get to the discussion part, you can talk about whether you'd like to consider adopting a resolution that could be shared with legislators, it could be shared with CDE, it could be shared with other advocacy groups like the Rural Alliance or CASB or CASE. But I'll leave that for your discussion later. And then the last thing is kind of twofold. One, I wanted to share with you, you may have seen some of these videos, there's four that I have, earlier in the year, I can't remember, but our performing arts teachers have done an amazing job this year. They have figured out how to have band practice and choir practice and drama practice and to do film and video and et cetera with masks in these environments where those have been considered some of the higher risk activities. And they have taken it very seriously and have done a phenomenal job of keeping kids safe but not depriving them of the opportunities to advance their learning and their interests. So I wanted to show you a couple of videos that I took of some of the events this year. And this first one, to me, was very impressive because this was 6 weeks into the school year. This is what the kids, under the direction of the band teacher, were able to do 6 weeks with 6 weeks of school when other districts, some of them hadn't even gotten in person yet.
Thank you.
I like when they pick good songs.
How many band members do we have now?
A lot. So that was just, that was a... I think that was the combination of a couple of different bands, but we've got marching band,
right.
And then we've got concert band, and then we've got jazz band,
the pep band,
and I think that last, the song I just showed you was all of the bands together, which, you know, that can't be taught in class, that has to be taught individually in class, and then they have to come together. So we could count the students, but I'm going to guess 50?
That's awesome.
So the next one, and I'm going to show you, the next three are choir, and it's a little bit of a progression, okay? Mm-hmm. So the first one, I think I showed you. And this is like the third day of school or the second day of school. It might have been the first day of school. I can't remember exactly, but it was right there at the beginning. And this is just a choir. I just walked in, picked up my camera. They're just practicing scales. Mm-hmm. You know, they just got right to it, but you can see they're as far apart as they can be. They all have on their masks. This then was the performance, and I believe this was also approximately 6 weeks into the school year. They, both band and choir, had another had other concerts right before the Christmas holiday. And there, I think, were four different choirs. This is just one of them, and I can't recall which one this is. So you can see a couple people sitting in the audience. Those are members of the other choirs. So the audience was the assistant principal, Kimberly Runyon, and me. And all the other choir members who sat distance in kind of in the audience, and then as they changed, they just went up. And so there was a little, for the students, there was a little bit of audience, and there was some actual applause after a performance. And then the last one is similar to that last band concert, which is all of the choirs singing together. And this is, again, just a little... So now you can see everybody that was there.
That's cool.
Singing to nobody.
Yeah.
Meaning to, except the video camera.
Right.
Yeah.
The cool part about that is, in a regular everyday setting, they couldn't have done that because that whole bottom row would have been filled with people.
Right.
It was kind of a neat little setup that no other class has been able to do before.
Right. And so, the this is just... I think one of the better examples of what our teachers have done to really make sure that the opportunities for all kinds of physical education, the special ed departments, etc., are doing to provide kids the opportunities to learn, to learn content, to engage socially, to have this be as normal as possible. So kind of part B of this is I wanted to follow up that I told you in an email a while back that we were restructuring how we're paying the performing arts teachers for all of their extra work, that we're shifting them from, I would call, extra duty to more like a coach. And three seasons, and they would be paid like coaches for three seasons. It seems like an easier and a better structure for pay and for supporting them, and that they're more like coaches. I mean, there's easily 50 students or more in that choir. They're as big, if not bigger, than most of our sports teams. And there's a lot of extra hours that are put in by the students and by the teachers. So that's something that we've communicated to them and that we're planning for next year, and I just wanted to kind of formally to share that with you.
Yeah.
And thank you for your support of the performing arts. And I think it's a really important aspect of the education 6 through 12 in Elizabeth schools, because the middle school programs are phenomenal. I mean, we have orchestra at the middle school, which means that the orchestra, which I didn't show you, at the high school is really quite, you know, for us, accomplished. And kids can really develop a level of excellence in choir. We typically have state choir competitors, all state choir competitors. Last spring, we were all set to have our drama program, our theater show, evaluated competitively. I forget, it's the Bobby G's, I think, as it's called. It's like the Academy Award for high school. And judges come out, they judge, and you get the whole play and different parts and set and all these things, and then they have awards. But all those things were shut down. So, anyway, any questions? Or?
Am I have anything?
Okay.
Carrie, John, do you have any questions?
Good.
No.
That's pretty cool, though. I like
That's
it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks for taking this video.
I think, just to make sure, this is so important for so many of our students and their parents, that we have strong programs that are college prep. So we have kids that are going to the Air Force Academy, Colorado School of Mines, CU, MIT, wherever, and they're successful. And we have kids that go on and do athletics after high school. And we have kids that go on and pursue serious performing arts, whether it's in film or choir or music direction. And to be able to provide all of those opportunities is really a strength of our school system, and especially in high school. So, and we want to keep that going.
I agree.
So, thank you.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll move to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 7.1 through 7.4?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
You're too late. You
were quietly like, seconded.
You were like fifth. You were fifth by
second.
The time you said.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Oh, boy.
Your voice is just so quiet back there.
Andrew, what did you say? I didn't hear what you said.
Who?
Carol.
Kim? Oh. Well, I said Kim's so quiet back there in the corner. She yelled second.
Yeah.
Now, what are we...
Oh, consent agenda.
Oh.
The consent agenda.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'll try to talk louder, too.
Okay, thank you.
Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Firmfeller?
Yes!
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
He's so
aye.
Okay, we'll move on to action items. I'm going to lose my voice. I don't have a strong voice. It didn't last long. Can I get a motion to approve item 8.1, 2020-2021 budget revisions?
So moved.
And I second.
Any discussion?
No, I think it all makes sense,
okay.
What was presented.
Okay, roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Fuller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to 8.2. Can I get a motion to approve the fund balance resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
I'd just like to thank Ron for all the work.
Yes,
on it.
That was a lot of
tedious work. A lot of brain cells.
Thank you, Ron. Okay, roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to discussion item state testing.
If you don't have much to say, it's okay either. I don't.
I mean, I don't know that our kids will be affected. Maybe answer the question. If they have state testing, I don't think our kids are going to be affected like the schools that, like you said, haven't been in. So, do you feel we need to do a resolution?
I think it's just extra. I mean, it's our voice is not going to make any difference.
Yeah.
But what would our voice be?
Well, I don't think if it were yes in favor of testing, I wouldn't recommend that. I mean,
no.
if that's the direction they're heading, then why push them more in that direction? They don't need that. So it would only be if the board mm-hmm. felt that you were really against it and just making that known.
But parents can still opt out if they want to,
yep,
correct?
They can.
So I think by offering that option, to your point, is our voice even going to be heard with everything else that's going on up there at the Capitol?
I mean, we're really, if we do a resolution against it, we're really more, in my mind, advocating more for these big districts who chose not to be in person. And why
should we?
Not
yeah.
to be mean, but why would we advocate for what they need? Our kids have been in school, and I think they'll probably just do just fine if they have to be tested.
Because
mm-hmm. we have great schools and great teachers who
I agree.
Can teach.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's going to make us shine and them
right.
pretty dim.
Here was the right model. I should mention I kind of left out something that's important, but it's never been a question, so that's why I didn't bring it up.
I think John's having a hard time here.
Okay, is that the 9th grade and 10th grade PSAT has always been announced that it would be offered.
Yes.
And the 11th grade SAT.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So those since early fall, the declaration was made that they will be offering those tests.
Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. John, Gary, do you guys have any thoughts?
No.
Just the same thing you guys are talking about, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. No thoughts on it.
Thank you.
Okay. So. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
We will move on to BOE planning. Our next meeting is February 8th. And if we need to have an executive session for superintendent evaluation, but we really need all five of us here.
Okay.
Yeah, you two knuckleheads.
I'm planning on it.
Okay, well.
I didn't plan on this, but I'm planning on that.
I know. We're sorry you had to go through that again. So if anybody finds out that they can't be here, let us know as soon as possible. Really, basically, that's
okay.
It. Okay. So. With that, can I get a motion to move into executive session RS 24-6-402 for the specialized details of security arrangements or investigations?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay. We're going to take a 5-minute break before we head into executive session.
Okay.